You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
Hey. It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the game, yeah, building the game.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, April 20th, 2015. You're listening to episode 151.
Like a bottle of Bacardi.
Just like a bottle of Bacardi. Boy, you totally threw me for a loop there, man. I wasn't prepared
full
for that
of,
even
full
a little
of
bit.
Bad decisions and.
Yeah, and
all
you can
sorts of
set
stuff.
It on fire pretty easily.
Like our show.
This
exactly.
is going a weird direction.
Doesn't it always?
I'm Rob, that's Jason. We also have a couple of exciting guests on the line here with us. We have the international men of mystery, the geniuses, so to speak, behind the tabletop deathmatch winning game, Penny Press. We have Matt Golek and Robert, is it Dykema Dulkes?
Robert Dykema Dulkes. How are you doing?
Thanks so much for joining us, guys. How are you?
Hey, guys. We're great. You got my name right. Thank you.
All right. I'm sorry. I'm terrible at that. And I said it right just before we started recording, then I screwed it up again.
You did. I was kind of surprised by that. I was like, what happened there?
Yeah.
Hey, can I just jump in and say congratulations. 151 episodes. I haven't listened to all of them. I probably listened to about 100. That's just fantastic. You guys should really pat yourselves on the back for that. That's some great stuff you've produced.
Well, thanks a lot.
Thank
we appreciate
you.
That very
yeah.
much. Yeah. Tell our listeners about you guys, about Penny Press, about who you are.
Well, this is Matt here, and I'm one half of Team Penny Press, and I'm the sort of the journalist part. I had a little bit of a career in newspapers before taking some time out to be a stay-at-home dad. And one day, Robert and I were hanging out in a bar after a game night at our local game store, and we were talking about games that we like, and we started talking about game mechanics that we like. Then we started talking about specific game mechanics that we wish we could see in games. And then both of us kind of sidling around the topic, and we said, "Geez, wouldn't it be kind of fun to make a game, to build a game, even ourselves?" Do you remember that night, Robert?
Yeah. I remember it. It's a long time ago, though. It's about 5 years ago at this point, I would say.
Oh, wow. 5 years. Is that when Penny Press started?
Yeah. So I kind of brought up, I would really like to do a game, I said to Matt. And Matt said, well, coincidentally, I've been working with an idea to do something with publishing newspapers. And so that kind of, we started talking about that, and yeah, that was the beginning of Penny Press.
I remember bringing the prototype over to Robert's house one night, and it was in a very early stage, and we played it a few times, and within like 2 minutes, we knew it was disaster. It just would not work.
It was
not go. But there was that core there, and that's one thing that I think is important for budding designers, is sort of figure out what's the core, what's the most interesting part, essential part of your game. For us, you know, in our game, it's reporters in the, you know, yellow journalism, Spanish-American War era. You send them out to capture stories, you bring them back, you puzzle them together on your front page. And that was the core, and that's the thing that stayed fairly constant throughout. When we had to make decisions, we had to decide whether to cut something, whether to leave something in or take something out. We would go back and say, does it fit with this core? Does it interfere with the core? We want to sort of keep the core sacred.
Yeah, so you got to imagine that Matt came to my door and he had this box in his hands that was a thrift copy of Jedi Unleashed. You remember that, Matt?
Mm-hmm.
And in it were like a bunch of meeples and a giant bag of cutouts. It can't even, it's like the thicker paper, not cardboard. Stories that were like the stories like we have now in Penny Press, but they were all kinds of different shapes. It wasn't just the shapes that were currently in Penny Press. And there were a couple of giant sheets, and you had to make a front page out of these giant sheets with all these different shaped stories. And There were cars, I believe. You had to drive over New York City. You had to pay for taxi cabs.
You couldn't just... You had to move around the city. Again, there was so much going on in the game.
You could go to Menlo Park and buy boxer's gloves and then beat the snot out of your competitor so they could steal the cities from them. It was awful.
Competitors, newsboys.
That's great. I enjoy hearing the stories of how games evolve. That sounds really cool. Can you tell us a little bit more about how Penny Press is structured now? How the real thing is?
Yeah. Again, that core has remained. You are a newspaper baron in the late 1800s, early 1900s. You have a team of five reporters that you send out to different stories in five different news beats or categories. You actually put the reporter meeples on a story. So it's a little bit of a bidding mechanic. It's like, how many of your reporter resources do you commit to this story? And as the game goes on, more stories come out with higher star values, and you get points for publishing stories. And at the end of the game, whoever has the most stars in each news category or beat gets some bonus points. So there's sort of a beginning game where you're just trying to publish a good newspaper, and then there's you sort of go toward an end game where everyone's scrambling to get the best stars so they can be like the war reporter, the crime reporter, the best reporter in each of those beats.
That's cool.
Sounds really interesting.
Yeah, and I'm sad and disappointed that I haven't had a chance to play it yet. So I'm really looking forward to getting a copy. I understand. I kind of want to follow the life of the game as it's gone so far. So you guys took it to the tabletop deathmatch for 2014. Released in 2014, and we did all the stuff in 2013.
We did it in 2013, yes. Yeah. 2013.
Right. And the series came out in 2014, and you guys were co-winners with Discount Salmon.
Yeah, Marcus and Kara.
Yeah, and good so folks. Yeah, and Discount Salmon is another great one, and Marcus and Sarah are awesome people, and I'm thrilled to know them, just like I'm thrilled to know you guys. What happened after the death match?
After the deathmatch, we went home just like everybody else. Well, first, at the deathmatch, I think, Matt and I only heard it at the last moment, and we went into that a little bit. And if you watch our video, we tell you a little bit about that. But we really only could make it for one day to Gen Con. So we flew in on Friday, right, Matt?
Geez, late Friday night, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and then early Sunday morning, like we had really Saturday. Early, we had to catch the red eye back.
Oh, Sunday, yep.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, early Sunday. Yeah, so we only had that Saturday, and there were two parts of videoing the death match. The first part, for us at least, we were the first team to present on Saturday morning, and then the second part, we had to do like an interview with Graham Stark from Loading Ready Run, who did the production on the Temple of Death match.
Yep.
They filmed us playing a little bit to have some fill-in material for the video. And then in the evening, and this really was the highlight of my trip, we had a big meetup with all the contestants, including you, Rob, from the Temple of Death match. I think almost everybody was there. There were a few people not there, but it was quite a big group.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was so fantastic to meet everybody.
Yeah,
that
sure was.
Awesome.
Yeah, I remember that was one of the highlights of that whole Gen Con for me personally. It was so much fun.
Yeah, it was great. So early Sunday morning, we flew back home, and then we didn't hear anything for about a month. And then we got a note from Cards Against Humanity that they wanted to talk to us. And so I said to Matt, let's practice our graceful loser faces so that we don't look too awful when they film, like when they announce to everybody that they lost.
Yeah, I really thought we were not the ones, because everyone's game looks so much nicer than ours. It just...
We still have that Jedi Unleashed box.
That's right, we brought that to Gen Con.
So, and then, of course, they said, you won. And you see Matt's expression there on the video. You don't see me because we couldn't get the three-way video to work. So they have like a static picture of myself that they, I think, superimposed on top of the video that they actually had. Because I don't even think that that was on the screen at that point.
And and that's awesome. You guys must have been thrilled. And then I think one of the goals of the deathmatch, were one of the hopes of the deathmatch is that we would all go out and self-publish our games. And you guys ended up taking a different route, but actually kind of the same route that I was hoping to take, which is that you hooked up with a publisher, right?
Yeah. So one of the, oh, I'm sorry, Matt, why don't you go ahead?
Yeah, we did. We went with Osmati Games, and Chris, the fellow, was one of the judges, actually, and he had seen the game there. He'd also played the game earlier, unbeknownst to us, through the Boston Festival of Indie Games. We also entered Penny Press in there, too. That's a wonderful thing held at MIT. It's mostly just an opportunity to play test your games in front of a lot of people. It's not, I guess there's a small competitive aspect to it, but it's more just get your game out there. Anyway, so he had played it, and he approached us there and said, hey, I'd like to publish your game. We weren't quite sure what we were going to do with our game after winning. We sort of thought about it for a while, went back and forth, and decided that Chris, who's a small publisher, could get us into a lot of distribution channels. Now, we might not make as much money, but he's been great in helping us get the game. He's going to get the game into a lot of stores. Distributors are ordering hundreds of copies to send them out to different folks. He's going to take care of a lot of business that in the end we decided we didn't want to do. And Cards is very respectful of that, even though I think they were interested in doing promoting more of an indie route. But again, they were very respectful of us doing our thing.
Yeah, and that's super exciting. So the reason we're talking now is that the game is it in stores now, or it's about to hit store shelves?
It's about to hit store shelves. Right now, it was stuck in customs for like 3 weeks, which is very frustrating.
Oh man!
But it is here on these shores. It'll get shipped out to Kickstarter backers first. We had a really nice, successful Kickstarter, which is another sort of piece of the puzzle that I think that worked well for us. It helped get people interested in the game, get people talking about the game, and sort of, I think small publishers use Kickstarter to sort of gauge, how big an interest is this in the game. And
it was important for us for a number of reasons. First of all, it really gave us some confidence on how many people were interested in a game like Penny Press, and it turned out to be far more people than we ever could have dreamt of. And it also gave us a chance to do something after winning the Tabletop Deathmatch, because we won the Tabletop Deathmatch, and clearly we did not have a game ready at that point. So we wanted people to go somewhere and be able to buy the game without actually buying the game, and Kickstarter gave us a shot at that.
Yeah. So I guess I'm curious, because I'm always curious, and Matt, I know you're a listener to the show, so you know that I have a kind of a conflicted history of feelings with Kickstarter. So I'm curious what your guys' feeling is. So it sounds like you were very positive about the Kickstarter experience, and you were really happy that it went through that.
We are, yeah, we're definitely happy. I'll tell you the reasons we're happy, but I'll echo some of your concerns too. That we're able to reach out to a lot more people than I think just Robert and I could have alone. So I think actually having the thing on Kickstarter, having Penny Press up on Kickstarter, helped generate interest, helped drew more people in than we would have gotten if we just, you know, put it up on Amazon or put it tried to sell it ourselves.
Yeah.
So I think Kickstarter was very helpful for us in terms of, you know, attracting attention. Now, I think Robert and I have both had bad experiences on Kickstarter where games have not worked out or things have not been all that we had hoped and dreamed they would be. And so I understand that. But even though Kickstarter is kind of, you get the idea that it's supposed to be these indie people doing it all alone, I think you can have some great solid Kickstarters with some professional backing like Osmati Games, our publisher, small publishers, or even some big publishers can come on and use Kickstarter as like a pre-order system to gauge interest. It may not be exactly
a pre-order system, right, Matt? I mean, we usually improve the game based upon the amount of people that showed interest in Penny Press. And
yeah, I was thinking about more a Fantasy Flight kind of outfit. No, we could not have afforded to print Penny Press at the levels that we did and the quality that we did without those Kickstarter backers. I guess I was thinking more of a like a big company using Kickstarter, not Osmati.
Yeah. Yeah, I appreciate that. I'm trying as hard as I can to come around to that because I know that Kickstarter's done so much good for the indie gaming community in general, and I know that I kind of got all up in my head for a little bit too long about that stuff. So I'm glad to hear that from you guys. I appreciate that.
I mean, it's like a tool, you know. There's some good things you're going to do with it,
yeah.
And there's some bad things that are going to happen with it too.
Yeah. Well, hey, I don't mean to get sidetracked on Kickstarter there. Now, one of the reasons we wanted to have you guys on the show here is number one to talk about Penny Press and what a great success it is. But we also you guys came to us actually and said that you wanted to give a copy of the game away and have a contest.
Yeah, well, we're very excited. You know, we're just so happy that the game is finally coming out. We want to, you know, share it around and get people to play it. So I thought it'd be fun to have a contest with you guys and give a copy away to one of your lucky listeners.
Yeah, so we were talking and kind of throwing around some contest ideas. Jason, you had something to say?
Listeners, does that mean we can't enter the contest? So I kind of wanted to win the game.
No, uh-uh.
I'm not going to lie.
We're not eligible.
Oh, come on, man.
So we were bouncing around some ideas, and why don't you guys explain the concept here for this contest? It's a little different than ones we've done before, and I think it's going to be a really cool one.
We thought people could write sort of a crazy headline, maybe even board game related, and you know, the crazier the better, to that, you know, a headline that you might find in some Penny Press card or something like that, and you can flesh it out with what we call in the newspaper business sub headline, sort of the, you know, the second part of the headline. How's that? Is that what we were talking about?
Yeah. Yeah. Some kind of crazy, wild, yellow journalist, it's sensationalized headline, something game related. The crazier and more outrageous, the better, I think.
Now, did we want to make it period? I know we wanted to sort of make it like a board game related headline, like, you know, someone stabs someone over a Carcassonne game gone bad or something like that. Do we want to make it in the late 19th century period, or are we going to bring it up into modern times?
Well,
no, we got to keep it period.
Yeah.
All right, got to keep it period.
I think so.
Keep it period.
I think that's great. So listeners, send in your crazy, ridiculous, silly, outrageous, outlandish, other adjectives headline set in the late 1800s, early 1900s, as you're thinking.
That's it. Yep.
Okay. Make it fit that style. Make it game related in some way, in whatever that way, of course, is up to your own creative interpretation. Send that in to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. I think we're going to give everybody until the end of May to get their entries in.
Yep.
And then we will, the four of us will get back together and we'll go through the entries and pick our favorites. We'll pick one winner and we'll pick also some honorable mentions, some of our other favorites. And we'll have you guys back on a show after that to announce the winner and read off our favorites.
That's cool. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It's a very different contest and one that hopefully we'll have a lot of entries for because this is going to be great.
It's a good game. It's a good looking game. I haven't played it yet, but mm-hmm. I did see it on Kickstarter and it looks pretty awesome. So yeah.
Now the one thing that we do want to say though, we're going to have to limit it to people in the US only because for shipping concerns, we have to make that restriction. So sorry about that for everybody else.
If you're non-US and you want to enter, you certainly can. And you might get an honorable mention, right? I mean, that's right. Fair, right? I mean, we don't want to... If you've got an idea, you wanted to get out there, but we are going to limit the winner to someone in the U.S.
Yeah.
Just for shipping purposes.
Hey, let me just jump in. Jason, you mentioned it was a good-looking game. We so appreciate that. But we've talked about my contributions, Robert's contributions, and Chris from Osmati Games' contributions. But I do want to bring up Mackenzie Schubert, who is our artist. and he just did a knock out of the park job.
Boy, did he ever.
The box
yeah,
cover,
for sure.
Which kind of looks like a stack of newspapers and the player mat and the board. And we're very happy with the work he did. Check him out online. Mackenzie Schubert, I think he's MackenzieSchubert.com. He was a contestant in the Penny Arcade Strip Search, trying to find the best cartoonist, kind
of
like
oh, of course,
you know, our tabletop deathmatch.
Yep.
And yeah, he's just a great guy. He was great to work with, and that's boy, good. He made some nice art.
Oh yeah, man, he was one of my favorites in that show too. I really enjoyed that a lot. Well, cool. Okay. So, one of your duties as guests on Building the Game is to pitch a game. So, now it's your turn. What do you guys got?
All right. Well, I'll take the lead here. Robert, you're going to jump in and save me when I start to, go off into Nowheresville. But during our episode, the first season of Tabletop Deathmatch, Max Temkin, one of the guys from Cards Against Humanity, asked us, could you retheme this game, Penny Press, which we were pitching, as a tabloid game, sort of set in modern times? And we were pretty stunned. That was not a question we expected at all, nor is it one that we wanted to contemplate. But what do you say, Robert? Let's make that game. Let's build that game. Let's build a tabloid game set in modern times. How would we make a new game that's in the tabloid, like we're sort of building a tabloid instead of a 19th century newspaper?
Penny Press?
Nope. We're pitching a new game to these guys. This is what we do on Building the Game. We pitch games, pitch a brand new game.
Well, you take the lead on that.
Okay. So let's do a tabloid. You're trying to build a tabloid. Let's focus more on sales, I think. Instead of sending reporters out like we did in Penny Press, let's focus on the selling aspect of it. And mm-hmm. So the object is money. Let's do away with victory points and let's just keep it to money. So you're going to have costs in the game. You're going to have expenses. You're going to have to hire some different workers. Maybe you'll have some cards in the middle. Let's make it just a card game. You're going to have some cards in the middle. You're going to put out five cards in the middle.
First thing that I'm thinking is when you make a tabloid, it's probably not going to be around about the story so much as it's going to be purely about the headlines. So maybe we should have some cards with like pieces of headline that you can.
Yeah, let's make so. Let's put a. You get five cards in between us, and then we take turns selecting them. You have reporters, you have photographers, or maybe writers. I'm not going to call them reporters. Writers, photographers. I'm a snob. I apologize. And then you have pieces of headlines. That's great. Wouldn't that be interesting? You have writers, you have photographers, and then you have pieces of headlines.
And photos.
Take turns choosing. Yeah, photos. Photos are important.
Photographers is also a nice way to say paparazzi.
Yes, okay. Writers, paparazzi, and pieces of headlines, and maybe photos, too.
Seems like advertising might be important as well.
Oh.
Yeah?
As a way to make extra money.
Yeah.
Other than just selling papers or
all those
tablets.
Medical alert bracelets and things to scare old people. Isn't that what goes in tabloids?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So let's cut out the writers and the paparazzi. Let's just make stories, advertisements, photos, and then pieces of headlines. So you sort of got two resources. You got sort of the editorial part, and then you've got the headlines, the part you got to snap together. That's sort of interesting because that makes you make a choice. Do I try to get something to build the paper, or do I try to get something to build the headline?
So what would a turn look like?
I think you just sort of draw cards. It would almost be a little bit like gin rummy into a hand. You have to draw one, discard one, until you've got like a hand, you've got seven cards in your hand, and then when you're ready, you slap them down, and you arrange them into a three across and four down. That's going to be more than seven cards. Maybe a two by three cards. You lay out the cards, and you discard that seventh one. You have one that you discard. So you actually have a physical, tall standing tabloid.
So maybe leave that special thing out of there. We don't want to make it like Penny Press.
Something different? Okay.
Maybe you have a hand of five cards. Everybody has a hand of five cards. But there's also five cards in the center. And so these cards have like pieces of headlines. And they have a picture. And so your goal is to make a headline and find a picture with it that everybody else approves of. And so on your turn, you can only switch out one of your cards in your hand for one of the cards on the table.
Do people see the cards, or are the cards secret?
Your cards in your hand are secret, but the cards on the table are open to everybody.
Yeah. But then how do people judge? Is that just at the end when everyone lays down their hands?
No, so nobody knows what you're building. But at some point, you're going to like open up your hand, and you're trying to be the first.
What if your cards are facing out, like Hanabi style? So if you had your cards fanned out so other people can see your cards, do they have to be secret?
Well, I think if they're secret, you're working on this great headline with this great picture. But nobody else knows.
Yeah, I think it would probably be too much information if everything was open. Okay, secret hands, five cards in the middle. And then at some point, do you just say gin and put down your cards and say, I've got my paper? Sure.
Yeah, exactly. And then, of course, everybody gets to vote on whether that's a good paper or not, whether you're allowed that point, and then you deal out another hand of cards and do it again.
So we're not worried about money. It's more just who's got the best paper, who's got the best tabloid paper.
Who's got the best headline and the best picture to go with it?
That sounds good.
Yeah,
Jason, no, I like that. It simplifies it. We get the money
said,
out.
It makes it sound like a party game.
Yeah, it's more of a party game. I like how we wandered into that.
Yeah. Yeah, you say you just put your cards down and say gin, but I think realistically they'd probably more likely say whiskey. Yeah. Okay. So. Oh yeah, party game. Oh boy, that's cool. That and sounds like it could play pretty quick, and pretty easy to learn. So, yeah, best photo, best headline, because that's what sells. That's what sells magazines.
Well, especially the tabloids, the photos, man. You know.
Yeah.
When I see Batboy on the cover, you know.
Yeah.
I know. I'm buying that.
Oh well. So yeah. So is it a celebrity rag or is it like a Weekly World News sensationalist crazy thing?
Yeah, it depends what cards you draw.
Yeah.
It'd be funny if it was a mix of both.
Yeah.
Oh, it would have to be. You have to pick one because, like Robert was saying, you got to match your headline, your funny headline with the picture.
Right. Yeah.
Now, how do you know what's scored? Is that just up to the group? Since it's a party game, does the group just pick the funniest one? Or
at some point, somebody lays down the cards and says, I've got the perfect headline with the perfect picture. And at that point, everybody else opens up their hand too. And then you all vote on who actually has the best headline and the best picture at that point.
I see. Okay. So it's a party game, but there's an advantage to being getting done first because you theoretically will have the best hand built then. So you're more likely to get voted yes because your headline is the most complete.
Right.
That makes total sense. Yeah.
You may have the best. You'll be first, but you may have sacrificed a turn to probably give everyone else one more turn to grab something to sort of.
Yeah.
No, that's
to Europe. So, would there be any advantage to having a good combo but not laying it down and letting the game go on?
Well, so the more cards you have in the combo, the better you are.
Okay.
So if you have like a good combo, like you have two cards that make a great headline together, you have a picture that goes with that, and I only have three cards. So you have two cards that you're still trying to like match up with those three first cards.
Right. Like the right advertisement to go with it or something like that.
Well, the two more cards that have pieces of headline that would like make that sentence better and funnier.
Sure.
Or you can, that could be your page six, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds great, guys. Man, look at that.
That's
look at
good.
That. Just like snap your fingers and it's another genius idea.
Yeah, we gotta make this.
Coming next from the guys who did Penny Press. There you go.
You know, I gotta say, actually, I really enjoy just sitting back and listening to the two of you guys bounce stuff back and forth. I
was thinking that too.
That's a lot of fun. We don't often get to hear that, and I like that.
That's pretty much how Penny Press came to be.
It's cool.
Yeah, I mean, in all seriousness, I don't know how people design games alone, because I think of ideas but you got to take them to someone and sort of bounce those ideas off them and have them shoot holes through the bad stuff and say, okay, validate yourself. Yeah, okay, that one is okay, but this other stuff, this is garbage. Get rid of that stuff. So
yeah, you really
I don't know how you do it in a vacuum.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you
it's
know,
a lonely road, man. It's a lonely road.
And of course,
yes.
we don't. I mean, of course, we have this podcast where we bounce ideas back and forth, and then we just go home and work on them after that. And it helps, actually, that Jason and I work together every day, and it's easy just to pop into one of the other's office and say, hey, what do you think about this?
Right. Because we don't co-design games, but we design a lot of stuff together-ish, I would say,
yeah.
Only because we're constantly giving each other feedback about our ideas.
Right.
Yeah, so. You guys are pretty involved in each other's process, even if you're not on the box
actual
or
co-designing.
On the,
yeah,
the
exactly.
Page.
Yeah.
And I mean, some people might consider a lot of that co-designing, but ultimately, you know, we don't think of it that way because I don't make decisions about final decisions about Jason's game, and he doesn't make final decisions about my games, and so that's right. Why we still consider ourselves independent. But I agree with you. If I was all on my own, and I've said this a bunch of times before, if I didn't have this podcast, I probably wouldn't get anything done,
right?
Because I wouldn't have. That's one of the things that I wouldn't have. I wouldn't have that feedback. I wouldn't have that reaction.
That makes two of us.
Yeah.
And so I think some of that we do too. I mean, even though Penny Press is both Matt and I's game, we are really respectful of each other's ideas. You have to be when you're co-designing. And so anything goes. We can say anything to one another, like, hey, this is, I don't think this is very good. Maybe we should get rid of that. But if the other person really feels strongly about it, you keep it for a while longer. And you turn it over some more and give it some more thought and give it another look over, because that second opinion is so valuable, that second view.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, let's see. Do you guys want to take a few Twitter questions with us?
Absolutely.
All right.
Sure.
Let's see. We have a couple here from our friend at Board Game Links. I don't know if you guys know Board Game Links at all.
I don't know that one. No,
it's a it's a good website, but part of what he does is the our favorite website, Board Gameizer, which we just love to death. If you're not familiar with that one, check it out. It's a great great resource to just throw out a crazy game idea for fun brainstorming.
Yeah, yes, indeed.
So let's see. He says, "How would you take it if one of your games had a harsh review?" I don't know if you've had that experience yet with Penny Press.
Well, somebody I saw the other day gave us a 4 on Board Game Geek as a rating.
Ooh. Without you were like, I'll fight you. I will fight you.
I don't know how we would take that, because everybody's been really positive up to this point. I think we'd take it all right, but it isn't the most fun thing that can happen.
Well, review copies are out now, so we're just sort of waiting. I'm sure we'll get some good reviews. I'm sure we'll get some bad reviews. So I think we'll have to learn to live with the bad ones, and we'll introduce ourselves to some new liquors to get over the pain.
We just always
want to say that I think we would appreciate all reviews, good or bad. If you're like me, you read and listen to a lot of reviews. And you don't always agree with the reviewer, but you learn to what the different reviewers are like, what they don't like, and that's almost as important as the review that comes out of the reviewer itself. Because if there's some reviewers out there, if they give a game a mediocre review, and it's a certain kind of game, I know it may be worth a look. By the same token, there's some reviewers out there that I know, if they give it a bad review, I probably shouldn't look into the game. It's not going to be much. And yeah. So, but that's important for people. We don't want people to buy Penny Press that are going to be disappointed with it.
Right.
We want people that will really like playing the game. There's only going to be a limited amount of copies out there, and everybody that's ever published a game knows that, you know, you're going to run out of these copies at some point, hopefully. And they better be in the hands of people that want to play the game.
Right. And the thing to remember always to remind yourself as a designer is not every game is for everyone. And the fact that some people don't like your game is cool because it's just not their game. You know,
mm-hmm.
You can have there are tons of games that have won lots of awards that are super awesome that people don't like because, you know, it's just not their game. And that's why everybody has differences of opinions, and we should be happy about that, because that's why we can make such a big variety of games, because there's so many different opinions out there of what a fun game is. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Speak for yourself. I want unconditional love.
Well, Rob always tells people, you know, give us a 5-star review on iTunes for our show. And if you don't want to give us a 5-star review, that's fine, but keep your opinion to yourself.
Yeah, right. another question here. Let's see. Also from Board Game Links. Will you ever design a game for more than 8 players? What do you guys think?
Boy, that's hard. I played a game for more than 8 players on International Tabletop Day, just the other day at our game store, 2 rooms and a boom, which is a lot of fun. But I'm not sure that's sort of the kind of direction we're going in. At least we've got a couple designs in our pockets right now that we're working on, and I don't think either one of them is going to go to 8.
Yeah. You guys don't...
It depends on the game. More often than not, the game dictates the amount of players that you want in it. It's not that you set out to create a game for a certain number of players. You want to create a game that has a certain theme is really important for us. And then how many players can play it comes out of the game.
Yeah,
I think that's a good point.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. And I've had the experience myself, too, in designing that, you know, you come up with an idea, a theme, a mechanic, whatever, and that absolutely drives that. Lately, I've been trying, though, to push myself to think about designs and pursue designs that can accommodate more players. Since I did that with that storytelling game of mine, Finish It, I really enjoyed the fact that I can pull that out at a party, and if there's 5 or 6 people around the table, we can all play, and that's been really rewarding. So, and you know, Jason and I like to do that sometimes. We like to say, hey, let's try and do something in this style or using this mechanic or that fits these requirements, just kind of as an exercise to hopefully make us better designers. And that is something that I've been trying to pursue myself to come up with something that can handle 6 or 8 players. Just to see if I can make it work so I can kind of work outside my comfort zone. And that's been a real fun challenge.
Well, that makes sense. I think Matt and I are interested in making a good game, and then, you know, we'll see how many players it takes.
There you go.
but I totally understand about exercising the muscles, you know, just that pitch that we did a few minutes ago, you know, that was fun, and it did force us to do some things that we would have done otherwise. So yeah, I totally see your side too.
Okay, one more. If you could co-design with a famous game designer, who would it be and why?
Robert, do you want to go first while I think of a good answer?
Oh, boy, I know a couple. Having worked with Mike Selinger on Penny Press, I would love to work with Mike Selinger on another game. He is such a great guy. So interesting to listen to. Such a depth of knowledge.
I think damn smart about games. Just
unbelievable.
Just, yeah.
So, my answer is Mike Selinger to that one.
Okay.
I guess I will. Robert took my answer, fortunately. I didn't let him go first. I will pick Bruno Faduti just because he has a.
That was my second.
Yeah. He just has a fun life about his games. They just I saw him talk at a conference at Gen Con, and he said something that was really interesting. He talked about how in his design he's trying to pare back the components and let the players play each other instead of trying not to let cards and dice and boards and mechanics get in the way, because it's you're playing people, you're not playing the board, at least in his designs. And that's really stuck with me. It's like, how to get the mechanics and the stuff sort of out of the way so that people can play together. But I mean, his games just have such a fun spirit. I would love to team up with him for something in my dreams of dreams.
Excellent. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure who I would pick.
I bet you know my answer.
Yeah. Bruno Cathala.
Hey, you're right.
Yeah. Jason.
That's a good choice too.
Yeah. He's a fanboy.
I'm a total fanboy for Bruno Cathala.
Yeah.
I think I actually met Bruno Cathala and told him that. Yeah. So.
Wow. Yeah, he's had a fantastic year the past year. What a bunch of great designs coming out.
Yeah, he's really hit a time where he's just pumping out really good stuff. So,
yeah. Yeah, boy, I don't know. That's a tough question for me. I'm struggling to come up with something. I mean,
If it's me, Rob, you can say it. It's okay.
I'd kind of like to, man, how about Alan Moon, huh?
How about Alan Moon? Yeah.
Man, Ticket to Ride, I think, is one of the best games I've ever played. So, yeah, I'd just like to sit down and talk to that guy.
I don't think you can go wrong with any of our answers.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, listeners.
Yeah.
Listen to that.
Well, hey, guys. Okay, so once again, the contest. We want all the builders out there to send in their headlines, their crazy, outrageous game-related headlines themed to kind of fit within that early 1900s, late 1800s style, that time period. Send it in to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You have until the end of May to get in your headline and then your sub-headline if you want to make both. We're going to pick a winner. The winner is going to get a copy of Penny Press sent out to them. And we're real excited about that. I think it's going to be a really fun contest.
Well, thanks, guys, for letting us come on and give away a game. It's very exciting for us.
Yeah. So tell everybody out there how they can follow you, how they can follow the progress of Penny Press, how they can get in touch with you.
We have a page on Board Game Geek. Just look up Penny Press. You can also find us on Facebook. We post to that every week or so. But our website is pennypressgames.com. There's a contact page. If you have any questions, you can ping us there. Or, again, Board Game Geek or Facebook. However you want to get a hold of us, go for it. We would love to hear from you guys. And, Robert, can you talk about when you think the game might be in stores? We don't know 100%, but what's your best guess?
So I think currently we're looking at May 1st as a tentative date. And that's actually, you may very well see it show up a little bit early than that. Shipping to Kickstarter backers should start on April 21st. So it's come along very, very well at this point.
Okay, as Jason takes off his headphones and runs away and making a bunch of noise in the background.
Sorry, the computer just freaked out. It's all good.
We're still good?
Whew!
Okay. Sorry about that.
Sorry, guys, the computer freaked out and I was afraid it stopped recording, but it did not. So, yay!
So we don't have to start over?
No,
but that has happened before. We had an interview with Brian LaBerge.
Brian LaBerge.
It took like three tries.
Three tries.
Poor dude.
Yeah. Yeah. Brian's an RPG designer.
Super nice guy.
Yeah.
Super patient guy.
Yeah. I think the last time we finally got him on the phone was the night, or on the computer and successfully recorded, was the night that they caught the Boston bomber guy.
It was true. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And
he lives in Boston.
He lives
that's
in Boston.
Why,
it was a crazy night. Okay. Anyway.
So, hey, thank you again, guys, for coming on. This was lots of fun.
Thanks so much. And listeners, if you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email with your contest entry or really anything else to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter. Jason is at J.A. Slingerland. I am at poorly_design. And the podcast is at podcastbtg. You can like us on Facebook. You can give us a 5-star review on iTunes. And you can go to our website, buildinggamepodcast.com, and come on back every week and listen to more of our shows, where occasionally we will talk with awesome people like Matt and Robert. Thanks again, guys. We really, really appreciate it.
Thank you. Our pleasure.
Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
Yeah, we should be good. Yeah. It's a little quiet, but you should be able to level later it, right?
Yeah.
Am I a little quiet? Because I can turn it up.
Yeah, we can do some tweaking on our side. Can you guys hear us okay?
It's probably more than that. Yeah, I can hear you guys fine.
Okay, cool. You should really be able to hear me because I'm right next to the phone.
Robert, it's probably more on their end. They need to fiddle with things, I would guess.
Yeah. Well, no, we're good, Robert. It's
Robert,
us.
You're coming through nice and clear to me.
It's us. It's not you. It's us.
Yeah.
That's what she said.